Salvation Army band played, and the children drank lemonade, and the morning lasted all day, all day. And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away.
My overriding memory of it probably is mixing with Dave Gilmore. When we got to the point about John F. Kennedy and the Beatles, I had the it was my job to control the sound effects and the oboe faders. And as that part came in, I pushed up the fader and the screams got so loud, and Dave turned around to me and went, "You swine," he muttered darkly under his breath. And when we listened back to the track, in fact, that sounded fantastic, and we decided that we would make that, we'd include that as part of our final version. I suppose the other thing was, it was a sort of departure lyrically for me. I was trying out a new type of stream of consciousness lyrics that we really tied together with the title Live in a Northern Town, and in the end, which actually Paul Simon, who I've known for years, came to London and played me his album Hearts and Bones, and I played him Live in a Northern Town, which in fact then was just the verses and a chant and the chorus. And he said, "You know, you gotta call it something else. You can't go and ask for a Hey Ma 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 Ma." So he said, "What do you think of Life in a Northern Town?" Great title. So that's what we did. That's why it was called Life in a Northern Town.
It must be cosmic, really, because the first time I ever actually went and rehearsed with Nick and Gilbert at Gilbert's flat, I remember the first song we worked on was the Life in a Northern Town in a sort of very undeveloped form. And it was the first time I actually took out my cor anglais, which is called an English horn in America, so I hear. And the first time we really played together, and we sort of first got that feeling of magic playing together. Actually, when we recorded the track, it was in the cheapest studio in the world, probably, and we did it in 2 days, and we had sort of terrible sort of things to get over. I remember spending 3 hours to take down a door just to squeeze a timpani, and so it's incredible, such a good sound came out of all that.
My first thoughts and feelings about it were that it arose from like a 40 quid sort of Casio and a nylon string guitar. And eventually it turned into something that was really universal, and it was like linking a kind of African chant with classical oboe and strings. And I suppose it's just interesting, this new fusion of sound, and hope you like it.
The next track is called The Edge of Forever, and I think it was actually the second song that you and I ever wrote, that Gilbert and I ever wrote. It was, this is one of the tracks.
Yeah, it's about 3 years ago. In fact, we actually thought it was our first single.
Yeah, we did, and probably perhaps it still will be, but we started this track with Gary Langham, who was Trevor Horn's engineer. This was at the beginning of the album sessions, and I suppose my greatest memory was being in Psalm West, which was where Frankie Goes to Hollywood were recording their album with Trevor Horn. And we used to sit round watching Top of the Pops, which is our weekly look at the pop charts here, watching it on TV with Trevor Horn and the Frankies all sitting round, and this became something of a weekly ritual. It was great fun.
Actually, when we were recording at Psalm West, I remember the annual London West Indian Carnival was going on above, and I remember trying to play the oboe with these sort of thumping, sort of reggae megawatts coming down through the ceiling. But it was great because we go onto the roof and see these seething, massive heads. It was really exciting time.
It's true, I think I did my vocal during the carnival. I definitely did. Every time I wanted to get recharged, I'd go up to the roof and in the baking sunshine and look out at the carnival and then go down and do another take.
I remember actually when we did our first live date at this really seedy gambling club in the West End. This one always really made me cry.
Wanna run to someone? 'Cause now that you're older, I've been falling down. I wanna run to someone, but there's nobody around. I can't.
I think it's important to say that lyrically, I wrote the lyrics walking around the streets of Notting Hill Gate, where I live in London, and it's really, it draws a parallel between the Dust Bowl depression of the 30s that led to the Okies migrating through down to Southern California, and they were put out of work by the tractor, which threw them off their farms. They were working the farm by hand, I think, before that, and then the tractor put them out of work, and the silicon chip of the modern era, which actually threw us all out of work in England, or threw a lot of us out of work. And when I was unemployed, I had a lot of time to walk the streets, and so I walked the streets and thought of the lyrics. Gilbert had written this piece for a sort of contemporary dance piece for his girlfriend, and I had it lying around my house on a cassette for ages, and one morning I woke up and I had this very strong, vivid dream of being in the East with a girl, and I wrote immediately, started writing down the lyrics that I'd had, and then I had this thing on the tape. I was trying to find somewhere to put my idea for a melody, and I found this piece of music, so I just started singing melody over the top and playing guitar chords that weren't even actually related to it, and then together we came together and made it into the chorus that it is. And I think it's interesting to say that it's probably Dave Gilmour's favourite track on the album. It may not be his favourite song, but every time this track came on when we were doing the album, we all felt it was like a little rest. It was this wonderful calming place to go to.
I suppose we were somewhere in the sun. We walked in colored fields in
This World, and that closes side one, and it's really quite an important song, I think, for us. It was the last song we wrote for the album. We sat down and wrote the piece of music, and we knew it had to have some giant epic lyrics to it. And I was reading a newspaper about the heroin problem in Liverpool, which had reached enormous proportions, and it made such a strong impression that I went away and tried to write it. All the lonely people, and actually, it's interesting because we've got Pino Palladino from the Paul Young Band on bass, and Dave Mattis, who's a great famous drummer, who was, I think, in Fairport Convention amongst other groups, played with Joe Nama Trading, and we put them together as this special rhythm section and recorded this basic track at Britannia Row, which is Pink Floyd's studio.
At the time when we were writing this piece, I was thinking of Sibelius' Second Symphony, and then suddenly we found on the chorus. We had the mood of his Fifth Symphony, and then we put an A seventh in, and we had some trouble.
Trouble. And also, actually, with this song, we went to New York to do a video with it, and we shot it in the streets of Manhattan in black and white with this group of filmmakers who stuck with us for 3 days and just filmed everything we did. It was real sort of cinema verite, you know, Super 8.
Brushing the teeth.
It was a sort of documentary, The Dream Academy Goes to New York City.
Down in the Bowery, in CBGB's club, Lower West Side, Central Park.
Nick wears his bedroom slippers on the street.
That's right. and gets asked by a Bowery bum where I bought them. Very sweet. But it's also quite interesting that we did it. It's a song about Liverpool, but we did it in New York, and I always felt there was some kind of connection between the two cities, New York and Liverpool, and John Lennon said that quite a lot, and it seemed interesting as well, because any song that deals with drug problem, it's funny that it's slightly related to the Velvet Underground, and we were doing it in New York.
Oh,
Side two kicks off with a song called Bound to Be. This was another one that we started with Gary Langham, and then we went on to make it our own with Dave Gilmour. This, as well as The Edge of Forever, features the cello playing of Adam Peters, who you can hear on the Echo and the Bunnymen's album Ocean Rain. And he was part of a larger Dream Academy that we had when we used to play in a gambling casino in Berkeley Square in London. We had about a seven-piece band that generally got whittled down as we went on trying to get a record deal and became less successful. People were, oh, I've got to go, I've been offered this tour with the Bunnymen, all right, all right. And but this, he's very strongly featured on this track, and it's quite interesting, though, marrying funk and classical instruments.
Going for a kind of Motown feel, and I remember writing the basic chords for it just before Christmas 82 when we found that Phonogram had rejected Life in the Northern Town.
For me, the beginning, the sound we had at the beginning, the chords, the keyboard sound at the beginning is so beautiful. I remember we recorded it in the country, I remember lying in the fields having this sound waft over my ears, and it always recalls that for me.
The next track is called Moving On.
Oh, this is one of my favourite tracks, Kate says. I always feel it's spiritually akin to Luther Vandross, who's one of my all-time favourite singers. I really love this track.
All out, crowd the boy, put the girl in danger, whose only weapon was to believe in love.
Sex debut. I remember turning the lights down low to try and get in the mood for it.
And actually, you did it in one take. It was brilliant. We were very impressed. Very, very impressed. Mick Ralphs was down there with Dave, hanging out. Mick Ralphs and the Bad Company and Dave go on bosom buddies. So there was a great deal of hanging out during that. They were downstairs. Go on, girl. Nice one, nice one. Anyway, there you go. A Mick Ralphs impersonation.
Yes. She's
I'm moving. summer song. I mean, it's so warm and yet it's got so much pathos in it. I mean, God,
that and it was there. Really lucky because at the time Alan happened to have a Pat Metheny cassette and I was raving about him, and the actual rhythm in the middle on the keyboard is Pat Metheny influence.
Look out of your window on any day from June to September, the love parades out on the street where you live, and you know it's just a matter of time before it takes over. They've been married for so many years now, young love, serenade glow, sweet nothing in her ear. They're lonely together when they're not apart. It feels like she's holding on to someone else in the dark.
Living, I was just going, this is dedicated to the one I love. This just happened to be something I was starting to borrow because it's a song really written about, lyrically, it's about having an affair with a married woman. And so I started to go into all these sort of me and Mrs. Jones piss takes at the end. And then suddenly, this is dedicated to the one I love. Not really thinking of the mamas and papas or anything, I came out and Gilbert was singing, this is dedicated.
Like a falsetto sparrow.
It was extraordinary. And then suddenly in the studio, we just started vibing. And then we went in there and put it, I've never worked out ad libs, but this one had sprung out of this natural ad lib. And then we went back in and really, really did it. I love it.
The last one we did with Dave, wasn't it? A real sort of end of a relationship feeling. And in fact, Peter Buck from
R.E.M. plays on it,
He plays, and it's nice because it's got an English sound, but it has this American sort of feel within that, partly because of his steel string.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I met him at a party in London, and we were looking for somebody. We thought maybe Ben Watt from Everything That the Girl Would Like to Do, but we couldn't get him. And then I met Peter Buck at a party with Joe Boyd, who produced the last R.E.M. album and had produced an album for me a couple of years ago. And he said, God, Peter, love to do it. So Peter came down, and I think he was very nervous of Dave Gilmore, and borrowed Dave's 12-string Rickenbacker and played it. And actually, it was absolutely brilliant. As Kate said, it gave it this kind of raw rock and roll feel. And then at the end, this string line that Gilbert plays, it's incredible because it sounds very Aaron Copland theme from A Big Country influence. We all went wild for it. It's got this very sort of Western feel.
Nothing my back, pretending not to notice that I'm under attack. When
Next track's called One Dream, and there's really not that much to say about it, except that we did it in a couple of takes, I suppose. There was a bass player, an acoustic upright bass player, and a jazz trumpeter, I think, called Dave Marquis, and he had played with one of my idols, Nick Drake. And Nick Drake was an English folk singer in the early 70s, who in fact died in the mid-70s, a very sort of depressed guy who wrote beautiful, brilliant, romantic, lyrical songs. And oddly enough, used jazz musicians of the time. So it was a very odd mixture of sort of folk and jazz, and I really wanted to try and somehow treat it in that way, and it was something of an experiment.
There's one story that I heard about a man at war with himself. He couldn't tell which side he was fighting for. If your colors start to fade, that's when you reach out for the one dream in your life, the one dream that's in your life, the one dream in your life that matters more.
I'd just like to go back and talk about life in a northern town, because we were a bit sort of weird at the beginning, just in case you can get any more out of it. I just thought I'd like to say nothing.
Yeah.